Hello to all our listeners, just a quick disclaimer here. All of the expert analysis and the names of companies used by our guest today, Mr. Krishna Mundra, should not be considered as any direct investment advice. The names as well are used just for examples, and users must do their due diligence before making any trading or investment decisions.
That's a whack. It's sailing beyond the boundary. It's a big one.
Hello everyone, all you wonderful people. Welcome back to Beyond the Boundary. I'm your host Ayush, and this is episode number 6. First of all, thank you so much everyone for all the love, from the wonderful support that we've been getting for our first 5 episodes. We ourselves can't believe that the 5 episodes already are over, and we had a lot of fun. We hope all of you have had a lot of fun. Thank you so much for the love that you've been showing. For those who haven't checked out Beyond the Boundary, please do tune into episodes 1 to 5. So, we're here for episode number 6, and you know, for all those who listened to us in the past, you all know, I've heard us talk so much about cricket. You know, a lot of our users have heard us talk so much about cricket with a little bit of trading, few trading concepts. You know, we've thrown those around here and there. But today, we're going to dive a lot deeper into the world of trading and the stock markets. For that, we're very happy to have an expert with us. We have Mr. Krishna Mundra today with us. Krishna is a research analyst and a portfolio manager at Otis Wealth, which is, you know, one of the leading wealth management firms here in Pune. And he's also active in the world of trading and the stock markets. And we're really excited to learn so much from Krishna today. And also joining us is Nihil Parmar, a returning Nihil Parmar. Many of you heard him on our first 2 episodes. And Nihil is a co-founder at Crick Stocks and such a big part of, you know, the entire Crick Stocks and Beyond the Boundary family. So very excited for Nihil to come back as well. First of all, Krishna, welcome.
Thank you so much, Ayush. I'm really excited to be here. And let me just start by saying that I've been following the journey of Crick Stocks for a long time now. And I'm really excited to see your story evolve and where you guys get to. So kudos to the great work that you've been doing so far.
Thank you so much, Krishna. That means a lot to us. And we're really looking forward to learning so much from you as well today, and how we can also use a lot of the knowledge from an expert going ahead in what we do as well. Nihil, welcome back. We missed you since your last.
Thanks, Ayush. Thanks. I'm really glad to be back and really glad to be on the same table with Krishna. Absolutely. And you being the host, I think it's exciting times. As you mentioned, we have done a lot of cricket content. And this is the first time we have a purely stock market investment trading overall podcast. So I think, you know, we can deep dive into it, as we say. That's the code word we use always. So let's deep dive into the, you know, the universe of trading and stock markets. Over to you. I think I'm excited to be here.
We're excited as well. And let's get started with, first of all, you know, Krishna.
Yeah,
let's start with you. You're a research analyst, portfolio manager.
Yeah.
But why we say those terms, we'd like to know directly from you, what is it that you do? If you could just give us an overview of what is it that you exactly do. I'm sure our users will be really keen to, you know, have a better idea of it.
Correct. So, my primary job is to find great investments for my clients and myself in the equity markets. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
I spend a lot of time looking into companies, looking into the value chain of a sector, where there are mega trends happening, and what we could invest in for the long term and create value for everyone invested around. So that's primary, in a very short sentence, that's what I do all day long, and figure out where money of myself and my clients is best deployed in equity markets, primarily. So that's where I'm at.
Wow, that's really exciting to know. I mean, is. So very, you know, why? It sounds like something that you have to be completely on your toes all the time when you're doing that.
Absolutely.
Because since it's other people's money also involved, you're managing funds.
Correct.
So, you know, I'm sure the margin for error, the room for error will also be less.
Correct.
So kudos to you for doing that so well.
Thank you.
You know, Krishna, this is something that I've been wanting to ask you for a while now. Something that both me and Nihil also relate to a lot.
Hmm.
You are a mechanical engineer who then, you know, pursued his CFA and is now completely in the finance background. From mechanical engineering to this, I mean, how did that shift happen? We really want to know, how did such a big shift happen?
So, honestly, I'm from a Marwadi family and I've always had this business background, and very, very frankly, I was a very bad mechanical engineer. Okay? I was the backbencher, I was the kid who went in the class with a lot of attitude, who didn't like what was happening in the class and was always interested in finding out what the business world was doing. In my engineering days, I've tried and failed at two businesses, and I've always tried to do something on the business side of things. And mechanical engineering, although when I entered into mechanical, I thought that it was something that I would like to pursue. But फिर मेरे को लगा कि अरे यार सब लोग तो ये बात कर रहे हैं कि US जाएंगे, settle होंगे, masters करके. I thought this is not exciting. ये life नहीं जीनी मेरे को. कुछ तो high risk high return, कुछ तो exciting करेंगे, and I'll try to create value. So that's when I started, because I had this knack for businesses and understanding how business models work. I started looking into the investment side of things. I started looking into ki this company is coming up with an IPO. Maine dalna chahiye ki nahi. Just like this new wave of investors that has come now, and they have started investing in IPOs. Back in 2017, even I was at that stage.
All right.
And it got me interested ठीक है ये business model ऐसे काम कर रहा है फिर ये story ऐसे evolve हो रहा है ठीक है अपन शायद मैं खुद अभी ready नहीं हूँ एक business pull off करने के लिए I've tried and failed at two let's take part in the stories that are already there so that's how I started getting into investment started with my own family's money I got very very lucky into finding great mentors in my life like my father himself, like Mr. Ajay Latta, the promoter of Waters. So Jack Ma bolte na ki until the age of 30, just find great teachers and let them guide you. And then you can maybe start considering inventing stuff by from the age of 30 to 40. So I've gotten very lucky. They've guided me throughout my journey so far, and I'm hoping they'll continue guiding me. And that's how I got my foot into finance. And Ajay sir has a very, very big role to play into that process. And recently I started taking client money and that's where I'm at right now.
Wow. I mean, already into this episode, we've had so many life lessons already from Krishna, you know.
Perfect.
It's just so inspiring to hear something like this. Again, you know, it takes a lot of courage to tell yourself that okay, what I've been doing, what I've spent so many years in, I don't want to do that. Okay, there are a lot of people who just like, okay, itna dur aake khatam nahi kar lete, even though they don't want to do it.
Yeah.
You are people who found this calling and then work relentlessly towards it. So kudos to you for that, and thank you for telling us a little bit more about yourself. Krishna, talking about, you know, trading and the stock markets. Sometimes ये जो दो terms हैं, एक है investing and one is trading.
Good.
Sometimes many people tend to overlap them, you know.
Good.
So, you know, we'd like for you to kind of elaborate a little bit on, you know, how they are different.
Good.
How is investment different from, you know, regular trading in a way? You know, you manage money like you said, you have clients' money that you have to manage, but you also trade. They're also active in the stock markets. So, can you tell us a little bit more about the mindsets that are involved in investing versus trading?
See, to put it in one line, I'd say trading and investing are two different games played on the same playground. Right?
Okay.
So, you have to have a different approach for each. Usually, very theoretically, trading, the trade positions wouldn't be open for more than a month, say, or more than a few weeks, versus investing, you're playing the long game. You're playing the mega trends that might be happening in the sector and industry. And you gotta have a different mindset for that. You gotta go into analyzing the management that you're betting on. You gotta get into the qualitative aspects of it. You gotta also, obviously, you gotta get into numbers. Versus trading, you're looking at charts, price trends, where there could be a breakout, how much interest is being generated by the market participants. I think Neil can elaborate more on that. And what is the pulse of the market in that moment? Is there favoritism for stock for a particular company? Will that momentum continue? Could you play that right momentum right on that? Or are you expecting a reset? So all these different kind of aspects. So you cannot mix investing and trading. That's where you're trying to do it all and probably would end up messing up in both, right? So you gotta have a completely different game plan for trading. You gotta have a completely different game plan for investing. And there's that core portfolio versus satellite portfolio approach where you decide, okay, this is my trading capital. This is my core portfolio. You don't mix the two, right? I think that's how I like to approach my trading and investing also. Where me as a trader, I'm not someone who looks at technical charts a lot. Although I use them for getting the supports and the resistances and the entry points in a particular stock, I personally don't. I use them as a backup for my thesis. Right? Wow. And the idea for me trading is to get the pulse of the market on a particular stock or a sector, right? Where I have to put my money where my mouth is. As simple as that.
Yeah.
So let me give you an example. For few days back, when the bottom one results started coming out, we could see a lot of stress in the banking sector with the NPAs going up for even large banks like HDFC Bank, right? And my thesis was, if these guys are facing an issue, it is very much likely that the weaker links in the chain could also face much bigger issues. So we identified M&M Finance as the weaker link of the chain, and I put out a note that I think we need to get out of this company. Now I need to put my money where my mouth is, right? Because I'm telling my clients, okay, I think this is not a risk reward is not anymore favorable in this company, and we need to get out. So since I didn't hold that company, I have to short that company with whatever minimum capital that I could put to put my money where my mouth is, simple as that. So that kind of mindset for trading versus in investing, we are very clear we want to find compounding stories that could generate a healthy CAGR over a 4-5 year period. There are a lot of strategies that could be done, but we primarily try to find compounding stories. And because my investor base is such that we are not in trying to generate outsized returns every year.
Right.
We want a consistent wealth generation process over a period of time. So in line with that agenda, that's how our investing psychology works. So that's where more or less I think people need to keep a very clear line between their trading and their investment portfolio if they are trying to do both.
Wow, that's a really interesting insight. You know, I think I have a much better understanding of, you know, how these two terms differ from each other.
Okay.
And Nihil, like, you know, Krishna told us about how he identifies himself as a trader, and he told us about these differences. Would you like to elaborate as well? Nihil, you're someone who is also active in, you know, trading in the stock market, more in trading than investing. And how do you identify yourself as a trader, and what are your thoughts on this?
I'll just add on to what Krishna has already said. You know, I think he's given a very detailed understanding of how investment and trading is different. I'll quickly also repeat a point which I completely agree with, where he said that as a trader, you need to identify that you have a particular capital, a margin for trading, which you need to keep separate. And that has to be definitely separate than your investment portfolio, where you do not touch that. These both things are probably the north and south poles where they never meet. And you need to have that approach. I personally, you know, as you mentioned, I have always been more of an active trader, not an investor. I do, as you know, as I generate wealth over time, obviously, you know, we are doing a lot of other things in life as well. So I would want to become a long-term investor in the market because I believe in the India's growth story that everyone's talking about. I mean, I'm a true believer in that. We see top people like Nitin Kamath talking about it from Zerodha. You see people like Rakesh Jhunjhunwala, the big bull, talking about India's growth story. And every analyst or every broker that you talk to would tell you that there is huge potential in the Indian equity markets going ahead in the next decade or so. So that kept aside, you know, in terms of trading, I would identify myself as a trader. I would identify myself as a swing trader. Probably for those listening, you know, I could give a short brief about, you know, probably four different trading approaches. Where if you talk about scalp trading, which scalp traders probably last a few seconds or minutes, they have algos in place where they want to benefit the most from a minute's movement, maybe 60 seconds, 80 seconds, 90 seconds. Then you come down to day trading, where the more and more I talk to people into trading, they have told me that they stick to the rule that they don't hold their positions overnight. That is one rule they go by. It's by the sword that they will never hold their positions overnight.
Absolutely.
They exit, I'm sure Krishna is aware, they exit their positions. So they have a very specific approach in terms of day trading. They identify stocks or movements during a day. Then comes swing trading, where basically I fit in. Mm-hmm. I would say that, you know, I like to hold my positions for a few days or for a few weeks. As Krishna was mentioning, there are factors coming into play in terms of patterns, in terms of movements, in terms of breakouts. So I like to identify stocks. One thing that I follow is that I have a very definite approach in terms of trading stocks of companies. I trade a lot of my trading into futures, be it commodity markets or equity markets. I trade in futures. I don't do option trading. Also, I am not really interested in option trading, so I do a lot of future trading, where I take positions for a few weeks or probably for a few days. There are 220 FNO stocks I use in the market. You know, you can probably trade into all of them. But your mental capacity or brain is not equipped as a human to probably trade into all of them. So you need to identify. Because if you are trading, I believe if you are trading into random companies, that's because of probably a tip that you've got from outside, or probably a news that you've read, which you haven't fully understood. Why are you taking this position? So for you to understand why are you taking a long or short position in a stock, in an F&O stock, you need to identify what the company pattern is, how trading has been happening, what the low is, what the high is, what the average movement of the company is. Also building up to what Krishna said, that even I don't use a lot of technical charts. Mm-hmm. Because my trading is solely focused on patterns, and I try to identify a pattern in a price range between what a stock moves. So when I say price range, if a stock is moving in the price of 1000 to 1100 consistently, I would obviously buy it near 1000 and I would short sell on exit positions at near 1100. Now this price range, or this range that I have identified, would change due to three factors that I identify. I have seen across the last few months or a year that I've been trading actively, that these patterns would change because either of a breakout due to a positive or negative news in the stock. Either that, as you call it, these operators, they tend to move stocks. So an operator group, an operator has entered where the price of the stock has gone beyond your range. That can be the second position. And third is obviously the results that come into play. Every quarter, a company shares out results, which probably change the range that a stock trades in. So at the moment the range changes, I also like to sit back and relax. I don't do compulsive trading. That is one thing I've learned through losses that I've made, through experience that has come, through a hardship that I've faced in the market. When I sit back and take a back seat and I try to identify the new range now. Mm-hmm. If a range has changed from what I have understood, then I sit back and try to relax, I try to identify the new range, and then I enter the markets again. So I have a portfolio of 8 stocks that I trade in, and that is all I do. It's very simple. I take positions for a few weeks. Obviously, like, not to stretch it long, the last bit of traders are positional traders who sometimes identify them as investors, but finally they are traders because they don't look at it from a compounding effect. That is one word that Krishna mentioned is very important, is the golden rule of compounding and the power of compounding. So positional traders would take position for months or even probably for 6 months or a year or so, they would identify themselves as traders because they are finally looking to exit the positions.
Mm.
At some point of time, they are looking to exit the position, be it even a year, and you are not looking at the power of compounding here. So that is the core difference, I would say, you know, traders and investors would have, and how I identify my style of trading, or how I identify traders as a group in four categories. That's my little understanding of the market and trading.
So, you know, like how you know, really elaborated pretty well on the entire trading aspect of things. And Krishna, while you mentioned that, you know, this investing and trading, there's a difference, right? People need to understand how these two terms are different, right?
Okay.
So, as a trader and as an investor, I would like to ask both of you, is there a routine, is there a particular routine that you guys follow or someone who's doing this should follow? Nihil, if you could start.
Sure, there is definitely a routine, which, as I mentioned, you know, I went on for a couple of reasons in the previous question that you asked. So, I did mention routine. Routine can be in terms of how you go about trading in a day. Simply put, my routine is that I wake up every morning at 7 and I like to see what happened last night in the US markets. I like to track the SGX Nifty futures. That is what I do. I try to see the trend analysis in the Asian markets. From there you get an understanding of, okay, these are the trends for the market, the Nifty is going to move in a particular direction or not. From there, at 9, obviously, I love to see those 8 minutes of Nifty movements from 9 a.m. to 9, 8, when the Nifty and the Sensex is not something that I really track, but obviously the movements is there. And my routine then shifts to, obviously, after that, once I've got an overall understanding of what the market sentiment is, then I track my 8 or 9 companies that I have.
Right.
Then I try to read about them, where I spend the first hour only in watching the price movement. And then I scan through Google, I scan through YouTube, I scan through Twitter, specifically Twitter, where I fortunately, you know, there are these great Twitter handles available that give you the best possible news of a company, say Bloomberg, or even from the Times, the Times Group, Financial Times, they're giving you good information of the company. So I try to see if, you know, my 8 or 9 companies are out there in the news because of some of the other event that has happened in and around the company's functioning. So I identify if there's a positive or a negative news, that would be the trend for today.
Mm-hmm.
If there is no news, then obviously they are going to follow the pattern that they have been trading. So I try to enter from that perspective, and that is the routine I follow. So shifting from 3:30 the market closes, fortunately there's commodity, so I have time after 3:30 to shift focus to commodity markets, where there's a routine again that, you know, usually you see a lot of movement in the evening. The 6 to 8 p.m. slot is the time that I have identified that commodities move the highest and the fastest, be it silver, gold, copper, crude, or even nickel for that matter. So there is obviously a routine like that I follow and I try to stick to. So that bit works for trading. I believe everyone should have a routine, everyone should have a systematic approach towards trading. But yeah, I mean, let's hear from I'm sure it's very different.
Absolutely, that's why I want to get both perspectives. You know?
Yeah,
he elaborated so well on his routine. Krishna, we'd like to hear from you.
I'm of the belief that if you don't have a game plan before the market starts, you're not ready to trade.
Hmm.
Right?
If
you don't know, if you can play out the scenarios in your head, let's say, for example, I am trading on a result, right? Let's say market is assuming XYZ company will have a 15% growth rate in revenue and will have a 20% EBITDA margin. I'm saying this is understated. Maybe the company should have this quarter a 20% growth rate and a 25% EBITDA margin. So my view is different than the market. I am bullish on the company. This is prepared not while market hours, right? This is already in my mind before the 9 o'clock, 9:15 bell.
Right.
So you gotta have a game plan before the market starts so that you know exactly what to do if your thesis is wrong, if your thesis is right, how long you need to hold it. So that's really important. Wake up early, have a game plan in your mind, or at least the day earlier, if you're not a morning person. Two golden rules for any trader: stop loss and position size. I cannot understate the importance of these simple but absolutely essential rules for traders. If you don't have a clear stop loss where you want to exit the trade, if your thesis is wrong, you're probably getting emotional about the trade, right? Even if you feel you're right 100%, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, get out. For the time being, reevaluate, reassess. If you need to get in back, if the market is maybe overly discounting something, then you gotta reassess. But for the moment, you gotta get out. I think that's a really important rule to have, stop loss rule. And position sizing, don't bet so much that if you're wrong, you'll lose so much that you can't recover from it, right? So these two rules, if I am trading, I absolutely make sure that I'm not emotional about it. No matter how strongly I feel about a trade, I will have these two basic rules always nudging me. Yes, I need to have a proper position sizing, I need to have a proper stop loss, and I need to have a clear strategy. And after the market is done, after the trade is done, I try to maintain a trading journal where I go back, reevaluate what was my thesis, did it work out as I thought it would, and if it didn't work out, what happened, what could I do better. So once you start creating this log over a month, over a year, over 5 years, then you start reflecting back and then you see your progress and then you see how much you have learned,
right?
So a trading journal, having that is extremely important. And then obviously, like Neil said, that you got to identify your core competence. He wouldn't trade in 220 F&O stocks or 6000 general stocks, because that's just humanly impossible to do. You got to identify your core competence. You got to identify which companies you feel you understand, which you've studied, which you've put your work in, and then stick to that. Once you start expanding your core competence, that's when you can start doing all these kinds of different trades. But when you're starting out, probably identify your core competence and stick to it. So generally, that's my routine. Wake up, get a broad sense on what's happening globally, macroeconomic side. Get a broad sense on the sector that I'm going to trade into, the company and the sector that I'm going to trade into. Understand how the sentiment around that company is in general has been for let's say last 1 month, 1 quarter, 1 year, why it has been like that, and then go about it. So that's roughly how the trading side of my game plan is usually.
I'll just quickly add on to one very important aspect that Krishna mentioned, that stop loss. And it's funny because it's funny and it's true that one of my colleagues, we were having a chat about, you know, trading and about stop loss. And where we were talking about, if you don't have a stop loss, and not just having a stop loss, maintaining it. The fact that you exit your position is a stop loss, is it? If you don't exit your position, then as Krishna mentioned, you are probably getting emotional about it. And I think it's very important for a trader to understand that don't get emotional about a stock. And I'll put this line out that my friend used, my colleague used, that he said, "Ki stock se pyar mat karo, pyar apne biwi ya girlfriend se karo." So he
life had lessons again.
Life lessons again, but he made sense, because
absolutely,
he's like, agar aap stop loss cut nahi kar rahe ho, agar aap exit positions nahi kar rahe ho, that is probably you're getting way too emotional or attached to the stock. And I think that is something that, you know, all traders learn over the period of time, but it is very important to have an understanding of controlling your emotions at some point of time. And I think it's very interesting what he said about,
we are dealing with probabilities, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So probabilities in a game where there are so many factors playing at the same time, which is almost impossible to track, but you identify your ABCs, your top priority factors that are affecting. And even at that time, there's that tail event left that could happen and that could wipe out your capital.
Yeah.
Right? COVID did that to a lot of people. 23rd March was the lowest point that the market saw. And people who had positions without stop loss that nothing would go wrong in the world, ended up wiping out their entire cap.
Yeah.
See, that is a once in a 10-year event maybe. 2008 was one such event.
Yeah.
We saw 2000 crisis happening. So that discipline of stop loss, people who had that got saved. And that's so important. Your 10 years of hard work, if it's getting wiped out by just one crisis, there's something wrong with that, right? So these basic rules people forget in the moments and the excitement when everything's going great. But having that discipline is really, really important as a trader. That's for sure.
If a famed investor, late Mr. William H. Henry, written quite a few books on trading and investments, he once said, as Krishna pointed out, you cannot build wealth if you can't conserve capital.
So absolutely.
I think that is a golden rule and point that, you know, all investors should be aware of. I read that, I was just going through a few of his quotes and it hit me really hard where I realized that what he's saying is very true. If you wipe off your capital, you are probably then arranging funds from some of the other different sources which should have never come into play.
True.
Because you want to keep trading or you want to probably keep you want to be very enthusiastic about trading. So I think conserve capital, build wealth.
You just touched upon a really important point. The third point, apart from stop loss and position sizing, is leverage.
Yes.
How much you're leveraging up? Do you have the capacity to take the hit?
Right.
Trading on borrowed money is almost always never a good idea, right?
I agree.
So even that needs to be kept in mind.
Wow, it's already such wonderful insights that we're getting from what both of you mentioned, and Krishna, you specifically mentioned as well. Ki discipline hona kitna important hai.
Yeah.
Of course, you spoke about, you know, the entire concepts of stop loss, position sizing, etc. And you know, the big insight I get from here, one is that discipline hona kitna important hai. Dusra, it's about research. It's about research, it's about using your brain. And the entire emotion aspect coming into it. Dil se mat karo, dimag se karo, is what I think you could say here.
Correct.
It's not about emotions here. Right? More than that, it's about,
yes,
you know, your research. Head, you know, dil laga ke aap kaam kar rahe ho isme, but dimag laga. That is where you really want to excel.
Correct.
Right? So, wonderful. And, you know, we're looking at currently, you know, the equity markets where most of your work is also there. I'd like to ask you, Krishna, where do you think India stands right now compared to the other emerging markets in the world, right? We've seen Nifty has been outperforming some of the emerging markets. If I'm not wrong, just as of yesterday, Nifty touched an all-time record high.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that also happened. And so where do you think India stands then compared to the emerging markets? First of all, is this, on the flip side, is the cause of concern ki ye bhi ek aspect ho sakta hai ki market overvalued hai and it stands a chance of correction? Do you feel that? Please give us your views on this.
So, see, markets are forward-looking, and markets are forward-looking discounting machines, right? When a stock has gone up a certain level, this it could be because of multiple reasons. I'd point out just two or three important. Either it has gone up on the expectations of cash flows and profits coming in, or either it is already a very high quality stocks and pretty much the market has confidence that the cash flows will sustain, whatever they may be as of now. So I would be worried if it has just gone up on expectations a lot, right? That's where the sentiment part is coming in. That's where people are overestimating the greatness of a company, so to say. For example, in the sugar industry recently, there is a lot of movement around ethanol and how that story could evolve.
Absolutely.
And I did talk to a couple of promoters of the sugar industry, and they tell me, we are still in the planning stage. And yet the market is valuing that we are going to have a great run on the ethanol story. We ourselves are in the planning stage. So that is an example of things going up on hope, which could not be, probably would end up not being as great as we are estimating it today. That's where these micro bubbles or bubbles happen. On coming to a specific question on India, overall macro view, I would say India is in a great position right now. If you look at past 5 years of changes that has happened on the macro level, just day before yesterday, government announced a 6 lakh crore monetization plan, the PLI schemes, the corrections that are happening on GST level, everything is adding up. And see, the FIIs are seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can track people like Chris Woods of Jefferies or Mark Mobius, people like these who are allocating a big chunk of money to India. You can track indices like MSCI who are increasing their weightages to India. That tells you a story that yes, the world is bullish on India. And if we ourselves as Indians do not participate in this story, that's our loss, right? So you have to put on your optimistic hat. Having said that, I believe India is a bottom-up investment country. Rather than playing India as a top-down market level, we can do our work, we can do our research, and we can find out great stories that can survive in a bad on a bad day or a bad year, and that can thrive on a good year.
Right.
So we, as a house, believe that it's a bottom-up market. And great stories, great management, market size, big fish in a small market size is usually able to sustain their moat. Small fish but differentiated fish in a big market size is able to expand their horizons a lot. They have a lot of runway ahead of that. So you got to do bottom up work. And despite the market conditions, even if the Nifty or Sensex is there, I think there are certain bottom up stories which will continue doing well. So I think I would approach India in that sense.
Wonderful. That's such an interesting insight, you know, on this entire thing. The big message coming from Krishna here is that he's pretty optimistic about India.
Absolutely.
And the time ahead for the country. Krishna, are you particularly bullish on any sector? I mean, do you see any sector, any sectors, maybe those sectors that have a wonderful growth prospect in the time ahead?
Right. Yes, I am. So, if I have to single out my top bullish bet on Indian markets, I would call it the fintech space. There's a lot of revolution happening around fintech across the world. Countries like China, countries like US are probably a few steps ahead in terms of what companies have done there. But India is ahead in terms of what it has been able to achieve with UPI. That's a revolution in itself, right? So I am quite bullish on the fintech space and the changes that are happening. We are also seeing a lot of IPO launches coming up in this space. Paytm is coming up with its IPO. We are seeing companies, large NBFCs like Bajaj Finance, transforming into that fintech DNA, if you will.
Yeah.
And how they want to revolutionize the space. And I think there are a lot of exciting things coming in this space, so definitely the one to watch out for. I'm also bullish on the API space in India, where China is battling with a lot of chemicals and API space, where China is battling with a lot of environmental issues. They are cracking down a lot of specialty chem and API companies there, and a lot of those capacities are shifting to India. So if you just look at the top few API companies in India, they are backward as well as forward integrating in some cases. So you can see a story on the capex they are doing, the growth plans that they have, and the kind of leadership they have built in their products. It is very likely to sustain. Obviously, to some sense, today the valuations are reflecting some of it, but I believe those moats sustain to a certain period of time. I'm also bullish on the power exchange market in India. See, we have just one company, that's no secret anymore. We have just one company, IEX, which has a monopolistic kind of a market share in the power exchange market.
Right.
Where in European countries, the power exchange markets command a 50 to 90% market share of all electricity traded. Whereas in India, it is just at 6%. So you can see a monopolistic company with a very low market share and a lot of room to grow. Combine that with a great aggressive management, really good balance sheet, great margins, technologically focused, implementing of machine learning and AI for their users. the story lines up itself. You identify the mega trend. So as a trader, maybe one or two quarters they might not do well. The stock price would correct in the, but I would definitely continue staying bullish on the power exchange market in India, because that naturally will result into India saving about 60 to 65,000 crores per annum.
Wow.
So there's a reason why government wants this to get implemented. There's a reason why industries are getting on this platform, and it's a trend that you could see. So that's where I'm at. These would be my top three picks on where I'm bullish at as of now.
That's a valuable insight, right? I mean, this is something you wouldn't probably hear or get to know talking to somebody who only trades. But having the knowledge and a forward-looking investment mindset, I think this is a very valuable insight. Something even I chat with a lot of traders usually. I mean, my core circle, colleagues are people who trade. So these are things that we don't usually hear or talk about. So sitting here listening to this, I think it's very valuable insight which you wouldn't really get to know talking to a normal trader or a swing trader probably like me.
100%.
Being good for me, I'm glad I'm sitting here getting to know a lot of stuff from Krishna.
Absolutely. So we are really excited to learn. Having learned so much already and so much more to learn. Your point of trends, both of you made that point of trends also earlier. In markets, we see a bull run and we see bear cycles as well.
Correct?
Correct. We are seeing right now Indian equity markets are on the rise. You also, are very optimistic about the prospects that are ahead. So we'd like to know, what are these factors? What different factors go into a bull run, and what are the different factors that go into a bear cycle, into making that happen? And also, there is a shift that happens from one cycle to another, right? So what are the factors that also go into making that shift happen? If Krishna, you can tell us a little bit more about that.
So, phase from a bull run to a bear cycle is a pendulum between greed and fear.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's a point where you get to an extreme point of greed, where you think that nothing could go wrong. You're giving it too less risk premiums to the market, and a one trigger could lead to portfolios going down quite drastically. See, we are dealing with probabilities, and if we give it a 100% probability of something happening, usually that's not going to happen, right? COVID was completely unexpected. Who would have thought that there would be a pandemic? And yet it did happen, and it did affect all our lives so much, right? So the point where we go into a phase where it's extreme greed, I would say that would be the peak of a bull run.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the negative trend could start beginning. What I think investors should keep in mind is, markets are slave to earnings, right? In the short run, these booms and busts may make your portfolio look too positive, too negative. I think that's a distraction to a certain extent. What we need to find is companies that make money, as simple as that, right? When you are a shareholder, you are a owner of the company. Right, and if the company is making money, the share price sooner or later has to reflect that. It's absolutely it's a fact. It's a norm that if it's making money, and if it's not reflecting that, it's actually an opportunity. As simple as that. So if someone wants to understand the bull and bear cycles better, I think I would recommend following Ray Dalio. He runs Bridgewater Associates. It's the largest hedge fund in the world, right? And he's written a book called Understanding Debt Crisis, where he's analyzed debt crisis all the way from 1900s to almost 2020 and going.
So much data.
And what he's done beautifully, he's put it into a template. If it's an inflationary bear cycle or a bull cycle, then what are the factors that are going on? The government is printing money, there's liquidity coming in the markets, that is propping up the asset prices for a while. When does that peak out? What could be the signs of those peaking out? That deserves a 2-3 hour discussion in itself. But if anyone who's interested to learn all of that, I think the Ray Dalio is the person to follow.
Yeah.
right, to read his books, to understand. And someone who does that could probably identify the trends as they go, if not before. Identifying what's happening right now is equally challenging compared to predicting what could happen. So even if someone is able to identify what is happening right now, they could position their portfolios accordingly and make much better investment decisions. So
that's wonderful. Would you like to add something to that?
No, not really, to be honest, because you know, I think Krishna has summed it up so well.
Absolutely.
In terms of bear and bull cycles, and I think these are long term processes, right? I mean, I'm sure bear and bull cycles last at least for a few months or a year or so, if I'm not wrong. So from my mindset, I've never had to really look at it in that, because I've never been part of the dynamic shift from the bear to bull or from the bull to bear cycle, because I've always been part of it. And I've tried to maintain, as I said, my positions are short-lived there for a few weeks or days. So it really hasn't mattered to me in a way as a trader that the dynamic shift is coming, or I need to identify it. So yeah, from that perspective, I think I'll just go ahead with what Krishna has said and I'll keep that in mind.
Wonderful. As you said, he summed it up so perfectly, you know, the entire what factors do go into play. Krishna also mentioned this very interesting point, how one trigger can lead to big action, big shifts happening, you know.
Right.
To give a very recent, probably the most recent example, that happened yesterday, where the entire world of sports was absolutely buzzing because Cristiano Ronaldo, he came back to United. And what we saw was that this was even before the official announcement even came in. There was this one news article from one reporter that was, you know, spreading, where it said that now Manchester United are the favorites to sign Cristiano Ronaldo. And that one piece of news saw a big rise in Manchester United stock price yesterday. Right? We saw that while it was happening. And this was even before the official announcement actually happened. It was just that anticipation that led to so much. So that, you know, shows, yeah, this is one small trigger, one something that happened leads to such a big shift.
That's also forward, as I mentioned, that's also a supporting event to what Krishna said, that markets are forward looking.
Absolutely.
People who are looking forward to Ronaldo coming back to United, may be in terms of commercial revenue that they will generate now because of Ronaldo back at their club, or the performances on field helping them winning titles. I think people are forward looking, people are hoping good things are to come. So probably the reason why the stock price shot up yesterday.
You could also take the Coca-Cola example, right?
100%.
If he's shifting a bottle 5 centimeters to the right, can cause Coca-Cola to lose a certain amount of market cap. That's quite incredible.
That's huge.
But see, in that, I would look at it, if I have to look at it completely objectively, I would say, I would ask myself, will that really affect Coca-Cola's cash flows for next 5-10 years? Do I need to be worried about my investment in Coca-Cola? Maybe not. If the company has had a track record of so many years where they've had a certain amount of consistent growth, they've had a certain amount of margins, is this the event that kills the company's growth rate? I would say maybe not. Mm-hmm. Of course, people would have different views, but to my mind, this was some emotion playing around. Right,
that's an emotional thing, yeah.
And that's where the pendulum of psychology plays such an important role when it comes to identifying opportunities.
Right.
So yeah, I think psychology also plays such an important role. I think I would put it in the top of my list to when you are approaching stock markets. Psychology is really important.
Right. Coming on your point of psychology, like you said, you know, that Coca-Cola aspect, there's a lot of emotions playing part.
Correct.
That's where also what we earlier spoke about, knowing your trends, knowing your research, having done your research, knowing, having that knowledge, will eventually tell you that, okay, this one thing happened, Coca-Cola's prices plummeted to an extent, but will that really affect them going ahead? So that's the way to look at it. While emotion came in, emotion is just going to be there for that little bit of time. Going ahead, it's going to be your knowledge, your understanding that does it. Krishna mentioned this very important aspect of psychology that plays such an important part in trading. We see that, you know, in a way people tend to maybe book profits too soon, or they tend to cut their losses too late. Right? So where does psychology come into this as well? How do you advise a trader who are, you know, really quickly affected by certain movements?
I think this is a really important point that you've touched upon, where people tend to sell their winners and keep averaging out their losses.
Yeah.
Right? This is where psychology plays like a pivotal role, right? If there was a bank few years ago which came out with a corporate governance issue, right? I think we all know we are talking about Yes Bank, right? Once you get a dent in the long-term story, if there's someone at the top doing some corporate musty and playing around with numbers and all of that, you are pretty sure that that qualitative aspect, you wouldn't want to bet on the management. You don't know what they are going to do with the shareholders' money, right? So it's immediately out of our filter, right? What happened with people who had Yes Bank suddenly started seeing 20-30% losses on their portfolio in that stock. The tendency is it's gone down too much, it won't sustain, it will go back up, let's buy more. Then it went to 150 rupees. Then it went to 100 rupees, people kept upgrading. Then it went to 50 rupees, then people got scared. Is it really going up? Is it going to survive? And now it's at maybe 10-15 rupees.
Mm.
So this is where psychology, even if you're down 20% on a stock, but the story has been dented, you're better off getting out of it and redeploy that money into great companies, into good companies that will compound over a period of time. And the mistake on the other side is selling the winners, right? If a certain company is doing well, markets are forward-looking animals, right? And if it is doing well and it is expected to do well, that's why the stock price has moved up. So if a stock like IEX or Bajaj Finance has gone up in a certain period of time, and what it looks like is it's gone up from 2000 to 7000. It may be expensive. I'm saying you're looking in the rear view mirror. Why? You need to look ahead. You need to look at the business and you need to look at what they are doing and how much of an impact it's going to create on the PAT. Then judge if it's justified. If it's justified, even at 7K, probably a Bajaj Finance is a good investment. Or even at 420 rupees, IEX is a good investment. Because you've got to have a forward-looking view. You cannot be looking at the rear view mirror in this part. So, like you said, the psychology part is averaging out, to my mind, is a very dangerous word. At that point, you have to judge if it's going to do well or not. You are averaging your investment is quite risky, to my mind. Wo bahut dangerous game hai khelne ke liye. And if you're in a great company invested, as long as the long-term story is consistent, as long as there's no corporate governance issue, as long as they are able to capture market share, they are growing at a certain pace, and your share price is reflecting that, you should not sell business. And then there's other part of the analysis, opportunity cost. Have you identified something that is going to do better than this? Then probably you could take that call of moving to something else. But having a clear mindset of getting out of losers and sticking to winners could create long-term wealth, in my opinion. That's
You also like you to touch a little bit upon this psychology aspect. I mean, Krishna put it so well how psychology plays a part, and what is that approach that you should follow?
I believe, as Krishna also mentioned, that psychology and the mental game is a very important aspect of trading. Something that I deeply associated with, and I have been reading a lot into psychology, into behavioral science. Since the time I got into trading, I've always felt the need to up my mental game and not let emotions take over, because I think that is the biggest aspect into trading, that once emotions start taking over and you probably start diverging out of your trading routine or journal, that is when you start making losses, that is when you start getting into companies or stocks that you probably wouldn't have traded, or get start taking opportunities that you probably wouldn't have never taken. So I think that is a very important aspect, that you know, you have to up your mental game. And when I say mental game, there are a lot of things, because I'll quickly touch upon that, how I relate to trading. I think trading for me is a competitive sport. It is no different to any other sport that is being played. You could talk about various sports, like for example, if you talk about golf, a golfer's swing, of the swing that the golfer generates through the golfing stick, probably, you know, trading is also similar, where you're trying to generate the exact opportunity or the exact momentum the swing generate through the trade, through the golfing stick. So when I talk about stocks, I'm trying to find out the exact low or the exact high of a stock while trading, and that humanly is not possible. But you can identify a pattern, as I said, and try to fit in somewhere, that you cannot always be the best. And this is where, at this moment, it gets competitive. So if I talk about a trading range of 1000 to 1100, as I mentioned earlier, is 1000 the exact low that I enter in? So as soon as it starts approaching 1000, a stock price starts approaching 1000 rupees, there are a lot of people now wanting to enter, and everybody is competing with each other. Everybody, it gets more and more competitive, and that is where you need to have a clear understanding of, okay, this is the price range that I want to enter it, no matter it goes below that or above that, this is where I will enter, and this is my trading approach. So having that mental stability to take that decision is very important. You know, talking about stop loss, something that I believe is that also we, from stop loss, we went into averaging your loss making companies. So I think, you know, having a position and exiting at a stop loss is very important, because you are then, if you don't do that as a trader and as a human, you tend to then try to average it out by buying on the dips. You keep doing that to average your cost to a lower possible point, but you never know that what is the low point. You can never find that. And if you cannot identify the low point, it keeps going to a place where you keep wiping off your capital. So instead of that, probably take a small hit, let your ego go, let your anger go. I think ego, anger, these very basic human emotions that come into play in every sport, I think also comes into play in trading. You could actually talk about, you know, for hours about this. We'll have to do a separate conversation for this. But there are so many emotions that come into play in trading, and very basic are ego or anger. And you know, ego, because you cannot accept the fact that why do you keep buying loss making stocks? Why do you keep buying? Why don't you exit your position at a stop loss? That probably has something to do with your ego, because you believe that I am the best, and this is not a mistake. This is probably something that has gone wrong. I still believe in it. And you cannot accept it. You stop accepting the fact that you have made a mistake, your trade went wrong. Probably you need to be better or do better, something of that sort. So I think identifying or have a stable mind is very important. Also, the second part I would like to touch upon is the FOMO effect. Where in the market, you know, we're talking about opportunities, right, Ayush?
Yeah.
Let's relate sports and trading again for another time, where probably if you let go an opportunity in the market, it is a good thing, because there is always going to be opportunity in a stock. In the back of your mind, you believe the fact that there are more opportunities, right? But as a trader, as a compulsive trader, one common mistake that a trader would do is that they believe that this is the only opportunity that exists, and I have to take this.
Yeah.
Because there will never be another opportunity, and that mindset will kill you, will kill your capital, will probably you know, wipe off your capital at a point where you become very compulsive and addicted to trading. And you need to realize that there are opportunities that will be present. If you make a loss, you try to recover it by probably taking a wrong trade or doing a compulsive trade, which is again not right. If you are making a loss, you identify a pattern where common mistakes and common patterns that you have identified as a trader, this is my pattern, these are my emotions that come into play. That at this particular point of time, I start getting angry. At this particular trade or volume, I start getting stressed. and probably this particular amount of profit, I start becoming overconfident. So you need to identify those as a trader, and I think it is very important for everyone to write it down, follow it, and there are three steps to that: identifying it, writing it down, following it, and the third step is improving on it. There is no point if you just identify it and write it down. You need to improve. You need to improve your mental game. You need to work on it. So,
बोलते ना कि अगर एक हफ्ता तो मेरा खराब जा रहा है, you don't try to do make it up for it by another trade.
Exactly.
रुक जा, लैपटॉप बंद कर दो, थोड़ा चिल मार गया, तब back stronger with a good mindset.
Very important.
Patience is important.
मतलब आप अगर losses कर रहे हो तो इसका मतलब ये नहीं कि उसको recover करने के लिए कुछ और trades लो. Loss हो गया है, accept it, ego बाहर रखो. Tell yourself that boss, probably I'm not, my A game is not out there. Probably I'm not in sync with the market. Probably I need a backseat, I need to relax. And it's okay, opportunities are going to be present. There is opportunity in the market every day, every moment the market is on, there is an opportunity. And you cannot always, you know, you have to hold back, come back stronger. So, you know, I'll just give this one quick example of how sports can be related to, you know, trading. 2004 Olympics was in Athens. You are a big sports fan, so I'm sure you remember. And I think Krishna also has mentioned that he does follow sports to some extent. Usain Bolt, the greatest athlete of all time, as we know. 2004 Olympics, Bolt finished 6th in the 100 meters final. Bolt probably had recorded 10.2 seconds, if I'm not wrong, at the 2004 Olympics. Now, at that point of time, Bolt knew that there are 5 people ahead of him.
Yeah.
He wanted to do better. Next year was the World Athletics Championship. Bolt skipped that. Why? Because he said, I wanted to work on my game to be better. He could have just kept on running for some of the other races, some local events, leagues, championships, or the World Athletics Championship. And probably he said that in an interview, I would have again finished 5th or 6th. If I kept doing that, what I realized that boss, 6 महीने में कुछ बदलने नहीं वाला है. See, for the market, it is short lived. 6 महीना, 4 साल में Olympics आता है. Market में तुम 10-15 दिन break लेके you can enter back with a rejuvenated approach and you know a better mindset. But for Bolt, it was a 4 years. He had to wait 4 years, but he waited. He worked on his game. He knew that there are 5 people ahead of him. What do I do better? 2008 Beijing Olympics, Bolt ranked 9.69 seconds, rank 1, Bolt record broken, Olympics record broken. So he came back with a better mindset, he came back better prepared for the Olympics. So just the same, I think traders can also work on their game, not trade compulsively, and come back better when the better mindset is present for you. So mental game does play a big part, emotions do play a big part.
Yeah, it has to be at the top of the list.
Yeah.
The mental state of a person while he's on that screen,
yeah,
putting in that order or buying or selling something. It has to be very stable and focused kind of a state.
You guys are so nicely, very well elaborated and very well put it out there about what strengths a good trader should have. So, you know, someone who's doing this. Someone who maybe not even was very actively, but was a part of the world of trading and stock markets, about what strengths they should have, right? And that sports analogy is fantastic. I'm sure so many people will be able to relate to that. You also touched, Nihil, on the FOMO effect, jo markets mein hota hai. Plus, we spoke so much about people exiting at losses. That entire FOMO effect, I would say, has led quite recently to a massive influx of youth in the stock markets, right? So many people recently have opened demat accounts. We saw a lot of numbers also back that trend, that a record high of demat accounts have got opened earlier this year itself. Again, people are coming in, they're still very new at this, learning, exiting at losses. Wahan pe a pullback and reversal wala concept aata hai, where, you know, again, psychology coming in here also, people get worried and they start exiting. But Krishna, we'd like for you to elaborate on what the pullback and the reversal is. How people can identify that this is just a pullback. Because a pullback, as you know, is temporary in nature,
correct,
compared to a reversal, which is a little bit longer or a bit more permanent in nature. So, how should people not be scared, you know, where they should be like, yeah, this is a pullback, time hai, let's be here, let's not just run away.
Right. एक एनालॉजी दूंगा इसके लिए. सो व्हेन समवन अप्रोचेस मी, लिसन आई नीड यू टू मैनेज मनी फॉर मी, आई टेल देम दिस इज नॉट अ सर्विस आई एम प्रोवाइडिंग इट, दिस इज अ पार्टनरशिप वी आर गेटिंग इट राइट, वेयर बोथ ऑफ अस हैव टू डू सम वर्क. इफ आई हैव आइडेंटिफाइड एन इन्वेस्टमेंट फॉर यू, इट्स इट्स प्रोबेबली एन इक्वल रिस्पॉन्सिबिलिटी फॉर यू टू अंडरस्टैंड वॉट दैट इन्वेस्टमेंट इज. एंड वेन यू आर फंडामेंटली श्योर दिस कंपनी इज स्ट्रॉन्ग, it has all the qualities of a consistent compounder kind of a return, a small pullback wouldn't scare you. Right? You gotta have that conviction. So aajkal naye generation mein kya ho raha hai ki mere dost ne bola ye stock le le, maine le liya. Underlying fundamental kya hai, maine study nahi kiya. Agar pullback aayega, I wouldn't know what to do. I would be really concerned ki is it temporary, is it permanent, is it going to bounce back, I just wouldn't know. Right? Because that's because you haven't put the work in. So number one tip to everyone I meet, this is going to be a part of your life, you're going to have savings most likely, you're going to be investing, why not put the work in as much as you can. It's a life skill that you gotta have, right? If people like me are spending 14-15 hours a day trying to find research, probably you can't because you have a day job. Even if you're giving your money in hands of people, fund managers, mutual funds, PMS guys, all of that, it is your job to ask them, question them, and understand where your money has been put in. So that will help you save from a pullback. And if it's a reversal, it is probably there's a very fundamental change happening in the industry or a company. It could be a regulatory change, right? Which has destroyed the long-term growth prospects of a sector.
Yeah.
That's where you take the call and get out.
Mm.
How will you know that? If you've studied.
Mm.
If you know the base of what the story is happening. It's not like you've studied one and it's done. It's an evolving story, right? And you have to keep yourself updated with that. And if you've handed over the responsibility to someone else, at least you should be in a position to question them and understand yourself so that psychologically you are very well prepared to bear a storm. That's I think that's one thing I try to do with everyone around me, be it clients, be it friends, family, where I keep sharing them reading material on a regular basis so that they get more curious and ask. What you asked about this influx of new investors, I think there's a positive side to it, wherein at least India's financial assets ownership across the demography is quite low as a percentage, right? So if people are coming in, maybe they'll take some hits. That will be the fees that they would have paid to the market. That would be a learning. I just hope that people, even if there's a pullback, like maybe right now small and mid caps have gone up too much on hope and there could be a pullback. And the new investor usually gets tempted to these YouTube channels or WhatsApp groups and tends to invest in this sub 1,000 market cap companies. And there could be some hits. I would say that should be taken as a lesson. That should not deter you from your journey of creating long-term wealth. So, luckily, I think the newer generation is more inquisitive, more curious. They ask better questions. That should help them on coming back. Hopefully, that's where I'm at.
That's such an interesting
thing. I'll just add to that as well. That one of the things that I have faced as a trader is, as Krishna mentioned, that he keeps sharing material with his family, with his colleagues, with his clients, and they keep asking questions. It is very important to have this ecosystem and chain of communication because that is how probably also one of the factors you can identify a pullback versus reversal is that when you keep talking to more and more people, you keep getting better perspective of the market and sentiment. If you are a trader who doesn't really talks to people or an investor who doesn't communicate, doesn't read the news, who doesn't research, who doesn't put time into studying the market, you are into a shell and you are into a lonely shell. where even a small trigger or pullback scares you, and that is where you start exiting your positions and the fear develops in your mind, because you are unaware about the positive sentiment that there is out there in the market with people and between people, because you are not communicating. If you are lonely in your own shell, I think that creates fear. Any small sign of pullback tends to make you think that this is a reversal and I should exit my position at losses. And that is where you start making bad trading decisions. Right. So communication and having, you know, an ecosystem of people you talk to is very important as an investor and a trader both.
जो बिजनेस कभी कभी मैं क्लाइंट से ये भी पूछता हूँ कि जो बिजनेस आपने 20-25 साल से बना है और एक कोविड के डर से क्या तुम उसको छोड़ दोगे? You wouldn't, right? So why would you take out your money of a great company that you've invested in just because of that one thing? You gotta believe in the management that yes, this is a storm we have to get through, and yes, we will bounce back and we will thrive in good times. So just because the market is liquid and just because you can just go and sell it at that point, I think that would be a really bad idea to exit your winner at that point.
Yeah, that's just so spot on from, you know, both of you, especially Krishna, the point that you mentioned, where wo trust hai, when you have that trust, when you've backed this particular company for a long time, a small movement should not really take all of your trust. That loyalty factor also comes in there, right? If you know that this is something that you've backed, then you know you continue to back your
conviction.
Absolutely, conviction is a much better way to put that. You know, talking about all of this, you know, we see there are so many alternate investment opportunities that are also out there. A major part of what we do here at Rickstox, and Nihil will be the best person to is the best person who knows also about what we do here at Rickstox. A major part of it is that we are building towards a place where Rickstox is an alternate investment opportunity for people out there, for our users out there. Okay, so Krishna, first of all, what are your thoughts about, you know, different investment opportunities?
Definitely exciting what we are seeing in the AI side of the business, where India has started developing its REIT market. There are some startups backed by people like Nitin Kamath who are exploring MBS, mortgage-backed securities kind of opportunities. So this side of the market is still quite nascent, I would say. REIT is developing quite well, and I'm excited to see that side of the AI business. And with companies like Smallcase, people are getting access to the top fund managers in the country at a relatively low investment capital and hurdles. So that's also quite exciting what Smallcase is doing. We are hoping to be on Smallcase very soon. So definitely excited about the AI side of things. I wouldn't consider crypto as an alternate investment as of now yet. Maybe Bitcoin could be, it's the millennials gold, as they say. So maybe that could deserve a portfolio allocation, but each to its own, right? We like to have a cash flow kind of investment that we have some visibility on what cash flows a certain investment could generate. At the core of it, value of anything, any company, any piece of land, is its ability to generate cash flows in the future. So at the core of it, valuation is that. So I fully don't understand how to value some of these bottom side cryptos yet. I don't know how they will generate cash flow, so I wouldn't call it an AI yet. And then there are you guys who are creating all these innovative ideas around how we can create an AI around cricket and sports, and how we can create a market there. So that's also really exciting, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'll just add on to what Ayush said. You know, at Rickstox, as you mentioned, that our long-term vision is to become an alternative investment platform where, if I may put, you know, like for a cricket lover, sports is more easier to understand and relate to. They relate to the cricketers in a very personal capacity and way. And if you're a cricket lover or a cricket analyst, so, you know, understanding strike rates and averages is far more easier than understanding PE ratio.
Absolutely.
So, samajhna ek bahut important cheez hai ki, you know, we want to democratize trading for the larger audience so that they have access to trading, they have access to trading in stocks or of cricketers that they fully understand. And I think that is the long-term vision that we have. And Cricket Stocks hopefully set standards going forward and soon become an alternative investment platform for the larger audience at play in India. The entire retail influx that is coming, I think that's still peanuts in terms of numbers. You know, there's a huge potential of Indian investors who still don't have DMAT accounts. Soon we could see that number increasing, and hopefully too.
Hey, I have a different angle to how Cricket Stocks is creating value for its users in another sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this business of investing, we are dealing with probabilities. If someone, because of their passion for cricket, is coming to Cricket Stocks and understanding the trading and the investing part of it,
mm-hmm.
and understanding to deal with probabilities, they will eventually do better in stock market trading as well.
Yes. Yep.
Right?
That's the goal too. We want to know. We want to educate users and traders who eventually would get into the Indian equity markets in the long term story.
So, like Cricket Stocks, I also encourage people that they should play poker because they learn to deal with probabilities. Right? They should be on apps like Cricket Stocks because that's where you get a sense ki theek hai ye Shahid Virat Kohli ka ye factors sab acche chal rahe hai uska ground hai, he is in a great form, probabilities of this happening is good, maybe I should buy Virat Kohli's coins and stuff like that. So it makes you a better trader in all markets. And Cricket Stocks, if it's tapping onto the passion of people of cricket and teaching them how to deal with probabilities, I think that's quite incredible.
The thing is, it's amazing that, you know, Krishna touched upon the fact that poker, through poker, though poker is illegal, just for disclaimer, it's a game of chance, been held illegal by the Supreme Court of India. But in terms of probability, I follow a very interesting channel on Spotify called Chat with Traders.
Mm-hmm.
It's a podcast channel. Very recently, it had a guest called Ray Letterman, who has written a book particularly on relating how poker and trading is very similar. He's a mental coach. I take a lot of inputs from, you know, his channel and his books that I've read, where he talks about poker being very similar to trading, where he has trained professional poker players and the same learnings and techniques he's used to train traders in the markets. The whole game of probability, understanding it better, dealing with it better. So I would recommend, you know, for somebody who's really interested in reading up, you could, you know, check his books out, or probably, you know, just go on Spotify, check the Chat with Traders channel out. I think there's a lot of good learning out of it. I just wanted to share this one important thing, since we're talking about a lot of emotions and we're talking about how emotions have come into play. One important thing that he mentions in one of his books is that as humans, we have limited capacity, our brain has limited capacity, right?
Yeah.
And there's a part of our brain, just so that I can sound like a nerd right now, getting a bit of science in it, there's a part of our brain called the prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for balancing emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Through trading, people through research have realized that that part of the brain, and here we are dealing with a very fundamental sort of flaw in how humans as a body has been developed. Because though the prefrontal cortex is responsible for you balancing your emotions, sometimes your emotions run so high that it shuts that part of the brain down. And that is where that is a fundamental flaw in your brain as a human, where if you are so high on emotions, it literally shuts the part of the brain that is responsible for you to maintain balance of emotions. And if that, he says, if that is the case, and then you enter the market, your brain has already been occupied and heavily loaded by such emotions that you have only so much bandwidth left to apply the proper brain or emotion into trading,
mm-hmm.
because your brain has already been occupied by emotions.
Absolutely.
So he suggests that find a way out, keep these emotions out,
mm-hmm.
because the more you are filled with emotions, the lesser capacity your brain has to function in the market.
Okay.
And don't enter with that sort of mindset of brain. So keep your emotions out, make sure you are completely focused and your most part of your brain is out there in the market that you can, you know, make the most out of it. It's a very important and interesting learning that I have picked up, and I wanted to share it with the both of you all.
Okay.
It's a very interesting thing.
Really interesting insights.
Such a unique or an important angle that is not generally talked about. Yeah. And it's fantastic. Oh, so today has been, I think, Nihil Sandeep's two words which meant about what he got from listening to the podcast that he just mentioned. It was good learning. I think today has been entirely about good learning. Me being sort of a dummy in the world of trading and stock markets, I would definitely, you know, would not call myself an expert, maybe never. I know there is a lot of work to do there. Again, there is a lot of research and stuff to do also for someone like me who's new to this. But there is so much I learned today. I now have such a better understanding thanks to both Krishna and Nihil. And Krishna, thank you so much for joining us today. You know, as we approach the end of this episode, we and our listeners, we here at Tricksox and our listeners who listen to this episode would really benefit from one key message that you would give.
One key message that I would give, put in the work. There are a lot of learning sources that are available. And if you have the curiosity and the willingness, learn investing. I think it's going to pay dividends for the rest of your life. Learn about personal finance. And if you are someone who doesn't want to do this full time, make yourself skilled enough to find great advisors and to evaluate advisors, right? Because unfortunately, there are a lot of shitty advisors in the market as well, and you yourself have the responsibility to protect yourself from that, right? So put in the work. It's not as difficult as people make it sound to be. It's a story, it's a movie that is going on. Our life in general, you could put it in that sense, and you would quickly pick up that interest. And use apps like Tricksox because they are subconsciously making you a better trader in equity markets as well. So definitely, cheers to the team. You guys are really doing a brilliant job, and I'm looking forward to see you guys evolve further.
Thank you so much, Krishna. It's really inspiring.
Really kind of you to touch upon Tricksox, and also, you know, since we are on an ending note in the last phase of the podcast, I would like to say to the users and a lot of people out there that a lot of people are, you know, into trading, but most people don't have the time for it.
So
most people don't really get an opportunity to trade, where probably they have other commitments, or probably they have a fear of trading because of the market. They have a negative sentiment about trading or losing their money. But all of them want to still invest because they believe in India's growth story. People want to invest, and you know, those people have a pertinent question as to how do we go about our investments. Whom do we approach? What do we do? Do we do it on our own, or do we, you know, consult somebody? And I think that is where somebody like Krishna, you know, at Otis Wealth comes into play.
Absolutely.
And you know, I think for our users, especially for people from Pune, I'm sure, you know, we'll put out a contact where they can get in touch with you at Otis Wealth. We'll put out Krishna's contact where, you know, users from Pune especially, and also outside, if you know, they want to get in touch with Krishna for handling their portfolios as a fund manager. I think he's the right person to guide you and to tell you as to how to go about your investments if you're looking at a long-term investment and you believe in the growth story of India. So that is amazing that, you know, people like you and a lot of others are out there. And as you said, shady advisors, we've all come across shady advisors and unsolicited tips that go on Telegram and WhatsApp channels. So I think I would suggest stay away from there.
WhatsApp University.
I have in my early days been a victim of that, you know, where I've taken unsolicited tips on WhatsApp and it never works. So get in touch with people like Krishna and not rely on WhatsApp and Telegram, I would suggest. And so that would be my ending note. It's very glad to be here with you on the same table. This was an amazing conversation. I think I personally have benefited a lot of knowledge that, you know, was new to me, a lot of perspective that was new to me. And as you know, I would thank Ayush for giving me an opportunity to be here on this podcast. I think I was happy to be here, and very valuable insights that I've got.
thank you to both of you actually for joining us and helping us learn so much. This has been a day of learning. This is, I think the biggest takeaway from this is we learn so much. We expand our horizon so much after listening to both of you. Krishna, thank you so much again for being here. Mihir, thank you so much again.
Yes, as well. Pleasure.
Thank you so much. It was a learning experience for me as well. And I think I am taking a lot of insights back home from you guys. So, looking forward to seeing you guys again.
Wonderful. Hope to see you soon again as well. So guys, that was that from Beyond the Boundary episode number 6. I'm sure you're going to have a lot of fun. I'm sure I had a lot of fun on this entire episode, and you're also going to benefit a lot, I should say, from listening to some wonderful insights from two people who really know what they're talking about when it comes to the world of trading and stock markets. For all our listeners, you can check us out on YouTube at GridStocks and on Spotify at Beyond the Boundary. Please do like, subscribe, and share this with other people who you think would also benefit from such discussions. So that was that from me, your host Ayush, on episode 6. We'll see you very soon with a lot more, a lot of exciting discussions and newer guests on Beyond the Boundary. Until next time, take care.